Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And we have Tammy back with us. So welcome back, Tammy.
Thank you.
And we were covering the notes on nullification, and we're going to reread the 44th, or actually, was it the 43rd? So we'll reread the last paragraph that you read, because this sets up the stage. But before I do that, folks, I want to remind you that the debt is fraud, and we need to start exercising our faith and the tools that our faith provides us. So please, if you want to join the Loudon for Liberty prayer circle, I just want to emphasize this every day. And so you either start your own, because I believe it's kind of like going to the gun range to practice shooting. Everybody needs to improve and work on that. And that's the same thing in seeking his guidance. But the other thing, my last obligatory before we dive into content, your campaign begins today. The election is over. If you haven't started, then you are getting behind. And I'm going to keep saying this. And so you need to start now. It's now or never. Anywho, there's many ways to say that, but I think that kind of covers it. All right. So we're going to reread 43. And, of course, there's the tricky words of Shibboleth and dropping, or Shibboleth, I'm sorry, I even mispronounced it. So we'll go ahead, and actually, folks, the meaning of that, Shibboleth, is basically a custom principle or belief distinguished a particular class of people. So in other words, for longstanding or regarding an outmoded or no longer important thing that they're doing. So anyway, he's basically saying, he's using that in context to that, and he's talking about this process of these people who are nullifying. So anyway, if you're ready to start, are you ready? Or yep. Do you have any questions from what we've been covering so far?
No.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you guys celebrate the Lincoln Day? Do you guys have a Lincoln Day dinner?
We do.
Why? Any idea? Why?
Well, I'm thinking.
Okay.
The general, because everybody believes that he's one of the best presidents.
Well, you know, if we looked at what Madison did and what Lincoln did, the father of the Constitution, why wouldn't we, you know, because he was the guy that actually created the Republican Party with and for Jefferson. So why wouldn't the Republican Party, commemorate that? And let me put it to you this way.
That's a good question. I don't really know. That's just what they've always done. And
right.
I don't know.
Let me put it to you this way. The commemorative date would be September 20-something, if I remember correctly, 22nd, something like that. And that is right before about a month and a half or a month and a week before the election. Wouldn't that be a great time to bring people together as the party?
Yeah.
I know that, you know, because a lot of places do the Lincoln Day dinner in the spring. And except in places where they have a harsher winter or longer winter, and sometimes they do it in the late spring, early summer. When do you guys do yours?
Well, we used to do it in February, March-ish, and then we switched to like the first week in June.
There you go. Just because weather is better. Getting people in attendance is better. So I'm not saying don't have your Lincoln Day dinner just because it's tradition, but I think that helping people understand how the Constitution was in peril and how the father of the Constitution created the Republican Party in the first place, that to me, that would be a really significant opportunity for, one, raising funds as well as raising education and focus on the Constitution.
Yeah.
So, just an idea for those who are doing their reorgs right now, because it's already begun. Many county central committees in Washington State have been reorged, so, and I know there's other states that are doing it. So, anyway, every 2 years they go through this reorg. So let's go ahead and dive into, because we're covering Madison's notes on nullification. This is shorthand. So he actually uses abbreviations when something would actually seem like, you know, it's a word, because the way they do abbreviations is more of, it's a completely different standard. So anyway, anywho, so let's go ahead and dive into 43. And there's going to be some points that I may actually, you know, interrupt, but let's go ahead and start.
Okay. No example of the inconsistency of party zeal can be greater than if seen in the value allowed to Mr. Jefferson's authority by the nullifying party. Whilst they disregard his repeated assertions of the federal authority, even under the Articles of Confederation, to stop the commerce of a refractory state, whilst they abhor his opinions and propositions on the subject of slavery and overlook his declaration that in a republic it is a vital principle that the minority must yield to the majority, they seize on an expression of Mr. Jefferson that nullification is the rightful remedy, as the shibboleth of their party and almost a sanctification of their cause. Okay. But in addition, let me pause there.
Yeah, let's pause there. So you read something that I think most people completely missed. And Madison is talking because he knows Jefferson really well. And Madison is kind of shining a little bit of light on the character of this man. And do you know what Jefferson's position is on slavery? Well, you just read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He says, whilst they abhor his opinions and propositions on the subject of slavery, this is the Southern states who wanted to maintain slavery. They abhor his opinions and propositions on the subject of slavery. In other words, Jefferson was not a pro-slave person. He was an abolitionist. And overlook his declaration that in a republic, its vital principles that the majority must yield to the minority, they seize on an expression. So this concept of a majority yielding to the minority, because this concept of protecting the minority. Now, what does that mean, the majority yielding to a minority? It is basically, I'll help, because I'm not trying to set you up, because I don't even think you'd answer this unless you really started to inflect on what it takes for something to become law. It requires not a majority, which is 50% plus one. In other words, being able to inflict on a minority, right? 49%. And so a majority is, you know, simple democracy, that context. And so he's basically laying out that this principle that a minority must yield to the majority, they seize on this expression. The point is this, that it's not really a 50% plus one minority. The minority power is limited at 13 with 50 states. In other words, if you have a minority of 12, then they must submit, right? So because if they can actually create an amendment and you can't stop them, so the stopping power of the minority for the federal government to being able to inflict anything in a constitutional amendment would be 3/4, which is 38 states. So that means the 12 states is not sufficient to stopping that. So if you can't, and what actually when you really dive into what the southern states and these nullifiers were doing, they were basically saying that one state could actually resist, that they would require to get to a majority of the states to overcome them for an amendment. But one state could resist while staying in the union. And that is absolutely not right. It's like, you know, saying, I am not going to abide by your precepts and rules of our marriage. Everybody came in with this concept that they were all in supporting each other and supporting that constitution. Ergo, it's one thing to stand up and say they can't be doing this. It's another thing to stand up and say, you know, they can't do this to us. What I mean by that is that if you are under attack by the federal government, there may be spraying or some, who knows what government it is. By the way, did you look up that website?
Which one?
Did you take more time to look at that website regarding the radar?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So when you're looking at the radar and when you're looking at those planes dropping chemicals on us, conducting chemical warfare, does the state have a right to stop that? Absolutely. They're doing you harm. Every person, every entity under these inalienable rights, states being sovereigns and we the people being sovereign, we have a right to protect ourselves. That's a constitutional right. And so the states do have a right to stop the federal government from taking their land. See, the Alien Sedition Acts was not a deliberate act in attacking the sovereign. Now, any person, if you got arrested, any person could challenge the law if it is not constitutional. So in other words, that means if you're being attacked and you are, you know, not abiding by that law and you get attacked, or I should say get arrested, they're doing you harm, right? They're taking your liberty away from you. Then you have a right to challenge that authority. And you can actually ask the judge, show me how this is a, you know, within your jurisdiction. How do these laws arise under this constitution? Now, I'm going to tell you that today, that judge would just look at you cross-eyed and go, who are you? Anything we do, we have jurisdiction. It's gotten that bad. And that's why the states need to actually, they need to start defending themselves from the direct attacks and calling upon, and what we're basically doing in Wyoming with this legislation in this federal review committee, what we're basically doing is kicking, or not kicking the can down the road, we're actually moving forward and basically holding the federal government and the federal representation in Congress accountable. But it's actually going to the states first. So technically, this federal review committee won't be holding Congress accountable. It's really calling upon the states and the people, because they're the first ones that have to be accountable. Like I said on Monday, that when it comes down to, you know, who is responsible for holding government service, we have to oppose every objection, or I should say oppose every infraction. And therefore, we need to always step in and say, you can't do this. So that's why this Federal Review Committee will actually be promulgating out to the states. They're doing this and they don't have the authority. And so every time and every step, or every, you know, it, you don't have to do it with, you know, every little thing. You know, this is what we found, you know, give statuses out to the states. And so this is what we found so far. This is what we've now found so far. So that the states can actually, and the reason why you would do it that way instead of providing a full summation is the effect. Now, My preference would be throwing out each one like we do with petitions, right? Because a petition is a single blow. And if you're going into the ring with, you know, other people, you want to convince them that, you know, with these driving influencers, you know, what about this? What about this? What about this? Doing it one at a time is where you maximize full effect. But I believe that in some cases we need to be a little bit more succinct when we're talking about, because, you know, this, you don't want to have to duplicate the transmission so many times that, you know, the receiving end goes, you know what, anybody else getting annoyed by, you know, the spam? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So anyway, so clearly Mr. Jefferson has a position regarding slavery, and what you've learned in our education system is wrong. He never looked kindly upon slavery. And as a matter of fact, he was, if you read what he wrote in the original Declaration at that point in time in 1776, he wanted to get rid of it. And if you read the Articles of Association, the states at that time, and I believe Jefferson was a part of that early era, they wanted to get rid of slavery. Until the South realized, these deep Southern states, oh, no, no, we need slavery. And so they started getting involved in political correctness. No, 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 you can't do that. And it was only 3 states out of 13. So that's where the minority at that point already started basically inflicting will upon the majority. Anyway.
That's true. Yeah. Right. It's usually the minority that's making noise that inflicts pain upon the majority.
Right.
That's the way it works in our
okay,
our committee,
so,
anyway.
So go ahead and get back into, but in addition, go ahead.
But in addition to your inconsistency, their zeal is guilty of the subterfuge of dropping a part of the language of Mr. Jefferson, which shews his meaning to be entirely at variance with the nullifying construction. His words in the document appealed to as the infallible test of his opinions are.
Okay, so what you just showed, you shooed, right? You mm-hmm. shooed. So you can tell that their language, the vernacular, has changed from those days to today. Okay. And his infallible test on his positions are, boom, go ahead.
Thus, the right of nullification meant by Mr. Jefferson is the natural right which all admit to be a remedy against insupportable oppression. It cannot be supposed for a moment that Mr. Jefferson would not revolt at the doctrine of South Carolina that a single state could constitutionally resist a law of the Union whilst remaining within it.
Okay. Okay, so hold on here. When we look at the word oppression, is oppression physically attacking? It's really more of, oppression is more of a coercion, or it's, you know, the arbitrariness of law, but it is not the full-out attacking and taking. In other words, they're getting you to go along with it. And when they actually come in and take your property, when they actually start attacking you, then it's no longer oppression, right?
Right.
Okay, so keep going.
And that with the accession of a small minority of the others, overrule the will of a great majority of the whole and constitutionally annul the law everywhere.
Right. Okay, so, and the accession of a small minority of the others overrule the will of the great majority. So, again, this is going back to how these very few states in the South. Now, the one thing that Madison's not really addressing is the oppression that the South is actually getting dealt with. They're being hit with these taxes. They're being hit economically that is oppressing them. It's not like they're coming down there. It's basically they're saying, you owe us this money. You got to pay this money. And they know that they need to pay it. Well, either that or they have to nullify. And so that this is where, and nullify means they have to leave the union, according to Madison, because it's not like they are coming in and taking your property. It's not like, you know, if the federal government would have said, you know, they created a law that ended slavery, and they went into the South at this point in time, because slavery was it's a state issue that was allowed to the states. If they said we're not allowing states to have slavery anymore without amending the Constitution, that would be an outright attack on the state and their implementation of the institution of slavery, their ability, their right under the Constitution to do that. And so right, wrong, or indifferent, that would have been a direct attack where the South would have actually been able to defend themselves. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
As repugnant as it is. And that's exactly what they're dealing with. And with the way they're looking at this, they're being attacked financially through these laws and effects, but they're not directly being attacked where they're coming in and taking their slaves from them. So this is setting the stage for the Civil War, because it only got worse and worse and worse and worse until Lincoln became president and they said, you know what? We're out of here, because you're going to try to end our slavery, and we're not going to let that happen. And when you read, and we can go into that someday, but when you read the secession, the four secession letters that are on file, at least at the Avedon, you'll actually find that right there in the very first paragraph or the first line, there it's about slavery. They're leaving because they need to protect their rights of slavery. Anyway, okay, so go ahead.
Okay. If the right of nullification meant by him had not been thus guarded against a perversion of it, let him be his own interpreter in his letter to Mr. Giles in December 1826, in which he makes the rightful remedy of a state in an extreme case to be a separation from the Union, not a resistance to its authority while remaining in it.
Okay, so I'm going to reemphasize that, folks. In this letter to Mr. Giles, this is December 18, I want to say 25. It can't be 1826, because Thomas Jefferson died July 4th, 1826. Yeah. Right? Okay, so he's incorrect on the day and possibly the year, whatever that is. It may have been, I think if it was December, it was 1826, right before he died. And in this letter, he basically says, and this is what he's recounting, in which he makes the rightful remedy of a state in an extreme case to be a separation from the Union, not a resistance to it, to its authority while remaining in it. It's another thing to be resistant to authority and protecting yourself. Does that make sense? Resistance
yeah,
is basically
it's a
saying
confusing though, but yeah.
You see, resistance is just we're not going to abide by this anymore. And it actually creates it's the same thing that happens when they violate the Constitution. You know, you poke that little hole, say, we're not going to abide by this, just like we're going to do something we can't do. They're both breaches in the Constitution. What ends up happening is it creates erosion down the road. Now that they broke through, they can do these things. Now they're going to do this, this, and this. Or on the other side, the nullifiers, we nullified this. We don't like these other ones, so we'll nullify those as well. It creates the erosion of where you actually have this chaos. But maintaining your rightful step and your rightful state in the Union, while you're directly being attacked, like when the federal government started creating subsidies for farmers, the states were being attacked when that was happening, because all of those subsidies went into the farmers' pockets. And we're going into a break. All of those subsidies went into farmers' pockets, but bottom line, the state did not obtain any of the revenues coming off of those farms because they weren't producing. So in other words, these were direct attacks on the state, as well as basically manipulating farmers to basically not produce, causing other problems. So we'll be right back after this. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so clearly, what Jefferson, going back to what the resolutions were really calling for, was calling for interposition, getting the states, because technically, when you really read the purpose of Jefferson's resolutions of 1798, one, it created this declaration that we have a limited government. They can't be involved in these things. And then he went through an audit of how all of these laws that they created violated different parts of the Constitution. And then he said, we need to get together. We need to have committees of conference and correspondence and conventions or what have you. And so we need to start talking, we need to get the adults back in the room. Now, one of the things I would love to share with you, and as a matter of fact, thanks to Woody Kay, he was able to find and shared the copy of the letters that the state of Virginia received from these other states. And so we're definitely going to post that. And if we can get the same thing out of the letters that these other states that chose not to step up what they sent to Kentucky, because this was addressed to the state legislature of Virginia. In other words, each state basically responded to each state separately. And the interesting thing, and just share this, what I've noticed is the responses to the state of Virginia had nothing to do with anything that was in the Kentucky resolutions. In other words, they were literally looking in the scope and context of what Virginia had said. Because had you really looked at the two resolutions combined, they create a very solid case. Because when you isolate the one is just a response to and doesn't include the whys and so forth. Well, it kind of does, but not the details. And so, but when you put them together, then it's harder to refute. And when you read how they responded, it's like they completely ignored these laws were unconstitutional. So anyway, let's go ahead and pick back up where you left off, because I think we just finished that point where you cannot provide resistance to the authority of the federal government while remaining in the union. So go ahead. And I'll bet you anything Tammy's muted. Anybody got?
I am.
Oh, okay.
Whoops.
I shouldn't bet you anything. Let's make it simple. Anyway, go ahead.
The authority of Mr. Jefferson, therefore, belongs not to, but is directly opposed to, the nullifying party who have so unwarrantably availed themselves of it.
Okay, so this last paragraph here.
It is said that in several instances, the authority and laws of the U.S. have been successfully nullified by particular states. This may have occurred possibly in urgent cases and in confidence that it would not be at variance with the construction of the federal government, or in cases where operating within the nullifying state alone, it might be connived at as a lesser evil than a resort to force or in cases of not falling within the federal jurisdiction, or finally in cases deemed by the states subversive of their essential rights and justified, therefore, by the natural right law of self-preservation.
Okay, so what is he saying there? He's saying what I've been saying, that in the cases, because he goes, I'm going to highlight this because it's just that good and that important. This may have occurred possibly in urgent cases and in the confidence that it would not be at variance with the construction of the federal government, or in cases where, operating within the nullifying state alone, it might be connived at a lesser evil than a resort to force in cases of falling within the federal jurisdiction. Now, what he's saying here is he's basically identifying that a single state can actually, when it comes down to self, and actually he says it in the next paragraph, or I should say the next part of the sentence, or finally in cases deemed by the states subversive to their essential rights and justifiable, therefore, by the natural right of law of self-preservation. There it is. That's what I'm looking for. And so what we have here is he's clearly saying that if they're coming in and taking your land, if they're coming in and saying, you know, all of these resources, your coal, we don't like coal, and we're taking your ability, because not every state has coal. I mean, not every state has a coal industry. They may have some coal here, some coal there. Washington State has coal. As a matter of fact, there's a town that used to be a coal mining town. It's called Black Diamond. So many states may have, especially mountainous states, may have a large amount of coal. So that doesn't mean every state has coal. Hawaii doesn't have coal. I think California does. I know Washington, probably Oregon does, and Wyoming and Montana and Idaho. But what about Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri? Many states do not have coal. And so when the federal government came in and said, oh, you states that have this evil coal that we don't like, we don't care if it's yours, and you don't care about the Constitution keeping us from regulating you. We're going to regulate you and keep you from doing that. So they don't have the authority to do that. And so this is why I can't believe, I have a hard time understanding why there is no one at the state government that is taking a stand about this. Are you okay?
Yeah, I mean, why do they allow them to
Yeah, do it? Okay, so that's the question of the day. Why is it that, you know, the governor, and we know that the governor is a rhino. He doesn't care about the Constitution. He is a tyrant. And his attorney general there's no good way of saying the thing about Boers, but basically he is worthless. He's lipstick on a pig.
Shouldn't the legislature just get together and say, you can't do that?
So the legislatures can, but how do they enforce it? If the attorney general and the governor won't, and he'll try to veto it, the secretary of state could actually, you know, try to cause action. And if you have a state auditor, the state auditor could probably step in to say, hold on here. How is this constitutional? But the reality is this, that the corporations and the businesses, they should have been driving this. I actually talked to Bill Deal up in Sheridan. He died of cancer not too long ago. Rest in peace, Bill. He's a good guy. I talked to him about getting companies to actually back and financially support the Commerce Clause petition. All right? In other words, the petition regarding the Commerce Department and the violation of how Western states, as well as the federal government, are violating your right of commerce.
Yeah.
How much money would they have to spend to help fund this petitioning effort? Now, this would really go down, and forgive me, folks, but I just want to dive into, you know, how you can actually use some strategy here. You go after these major companies that would really benefit, and the people of Wyoming and the state of Wyoming, because if they're actually hauling, you know, and selling all of the coal that they could pull out of the ground, how does that not benefit the state and state revenues? Mm-hmm. So when the state needs revenues, they should be actually generating the revenue from commerce and not from taxing people's property.
Right.
Right? So by actually giving the state the ability to make money from energy in multiple ways, we've even talked about different ways, but coal would be one, fracking would be another. And so the state should, because this is a direct attack against their essential rights. And so protecting themselves is the right thing to do. And say, I'm sorry, we're going to do this. We have to do this. And then they should be calling upon all the other states that have likewise been ill affected. And then calling upon them on all these other things. This is how that Federal Review Committee could do this. But more importantly, I believe that these companies wouldn't have to spend a lot of money to actually help support the petition management teams, or I should say, because if you really look at the teams that would be doing this, this would be coming out of the Central Committee, the County Central Committee, right? We talked about having the Central Committee driving petition management. So actually, whoever is the chair could actually work with somebody that may be a party member, but that somebody could actually have a marketing, you know, element where they can actually go out and work with somebody that's getting funding as a pure nonprofit, basically rolling this funding over into running TV ads, radio ads, and say, why is this being allowed? And actually, if somebody actually sat down and laid out the financial benefit of the coal industry being revived to Wyoming, what would that mean? The fracking industry being revived, what would that mean? And I don't know what other forms of energy you have. But bottom line, the way we look at what's happening, this is how to actually highlight these things, because it starts there. It also goes down the environmental protection and so forth. The only way you're going to revitalize that is to actually get the federal government to hold the state of Washington accountable. Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, the state of Washington has no business not allowing Wyoming coal to be shipped through it.
Right.
That violates their right of commerce because they have a port. And most people, they just don't get this. They think, oh, well, you know, state can do whatever. No, no, no. That goes right into the Constitution. No state can levy a tax or burden upon that state. That port is a national, international port. Okay. Anything that is going out will go out, and that is revenue and the mechanism of revenue, and that state cannot deny another state to sell their product. So Inslee should have, and everybody involved, Bob Ferguson, who's the governor now, or will be the governor soon, Bob Ferguson should actually have his head on the chopping block. And what I mean by that is not proverbial head, but he should be fired. He should be removed by the Trump administration, by the Department of Justice. You have violated your oath as the attorney general. Therefore, you can't serve as the governor. Now, see, this is where we actually can start creating symbiosis between this petition of constitutional, constitutional compliance. When we have groups within other states, there's no reason why they can't be working, because as you start gaining ground, because you're infused with that, we should be able to actually have, because I'm sure that when we look at the ports, if they're being controlled by ideological people that are not allowing that, then that becomes another problem. But the ports, you'd think that they would want to fund the movement of more, because it would allow them to grow more.
Yeah.
And make more money. So you would think that all these people that are being adversely affected economically, they would just come to their senses and go, why are we allowing this economic warfare to be persisted against us because of these ideologues that are sitting in government seats in Washington State as well as Washington, D.C. Anyway, so and when you look at when you look at Wyoming and the environmental protection, or you look at the BLM and how they're coming in and taking your land, that is a direct attack. Mm-hmm. When they're coming in and they're seizing, they're taking control. The fact that they even have control over Indian reservations is repugnant to the Constitution and the rights of Indians, or I should say the citizens of the United States, because every Indian is a citizen of the United States. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that's exactly what the 14th Amendment did. But we only wanted to, they knew it would apply to both. Their language in the debates even pointed to this. And they wanted to kind of say, well, no, you know, they only meant the blacks, only slaves. No. Had they actually had the language that only slaves or only blacks or something like that, people in, you know, in indentured servitude, those types of things. No, it's just as any person born in the United States and under the jurisdiction thereof are U.S. citizens. So that opened up it for everybody. Anyway, all right, so now that we've kind of covered that, I believe the next step is jumping down to 49. And there's a cluster of paragraphs we want to kind of cover here. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. 49. It is sometimes asked in what mode the states could interpose in their collective character as parties to the Constitution against usurped power. It was not necessary for the object and reasoning of the resolutions and report that the mode should be pointed out. It was sufficient to shew that the authority to interpose existed and was a resort beyond that of the Supreme Court of the U.S. or any authority derived from the Constitution. The authority being plenary, the mode was of its own choice, and it is obvious that if employed by the states as co-parties to the and creators of the Constitution, it might either so explain the Constitution or so amend it as to provide a more satisfactory mode within the Constitution itself for guarding it against constructive or other violations.
Okay, plenary.
Constructive.
So the authority being plenary. That word basically means complete, unrestricted, full. In other words, the authority being full, the authority being unquestionable. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when you look right here, he's basically driving the real point that the states could interpose in their collective character as parties to the Constitution against usurped powers. Now, we're getting really close to where Madison starts changing his tone, and so that's why we're just going to kind of wrap up with these last couple paragraphs. But this is where he starts changing his tone, because right after here, he goes through, you know, what seems to be the pro on the nullifying the laws, then, you know, but what he's really doing is he's laying out the argument that they don't have any good argument. They argue this and they're arguing this, but the way he does it, you would actually think that he's promoting nullification. What happened? Did he all of a sudden change his position? So it's really interesting, the brilliance of this man and how he communicates, because he, you know, like I said, he goes through probably the third iteration, if I was keeping track, about you can't nullify, we have to interpose. You can't nullify, we have to interpose. You can't nullify. And even Jefferson would basically say, you can't nullify like this. And now he's getting to this part of, you know, in concluding what the Jefferson part was, that you have to interpose. And he's pointing out that this has to be done by the collective of the states. Okay, so go ahead with the next one, 50.
It remains, however, for the nullifying expositors?
Uh-huh.
To specify the right and mode of interposition which the resolution meant to assign to the states individually. They cannot say it was a natural right to resist intolerable oppression, for that was a right not less admitted by all that the collective right of the states as parties to the Constitution, the non-denial of which was urged as a proof that it could not be meant by the resolution.
Okay. So the point is that the states actually have this ultimate authority, complete, plenary, that they have the mode, or by using interposition, in other words, seizing, by basically going in and saying, look, you know, it's hard to seize a concrete building and make and talk sense into it. It has no cognitive powers. But those men at that time, and it's men and women in these days, who are actually sitting in those seats, you should be able to communicate clearly and succinctly to say, if you do not do this, you will be found in, you know, violation of your oath, where you're directly supporting an insurrection against the Constitution, and we will remove you. Now, because they're humans, they have the ability, hopefully, to think for themselves. They will realize that they are in jeopardy. If they do not comply, they will be removed. That they are not going to, the states are no longer going to allow them to exercise powers, roles, responsibilities, possess property, and or, you know, creating criminal laws that are not within the Constitution. That the Constitution will be complied to fully, to the letter. Do you understand? I mean, that's what they're going to be basically saying. Do you understand, Senator Cruz, that, you know, even though you may talk a good game, you are still doing things and you're still not doing your job? You need to demand that this invasion be stopped immediately and that the militia be deployed. Every single one of you, and you sign, you're going to basically, and what the states have to do is they have to collectively work together in sending a unified, and this is going to be the hard part, folks. They're all going to have to basically come up with a directive that will basically tell all of the representatives in the Senate and in the House that represents these states, doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat, if you refuse to follow the directive we give you in pushing this, you know, the intent behind this directive, in other words, dismantling the Department of Education and disbanding it, getting rid of everything. And then inside that dismantling part, you're going to seize all of the data and so forth. We're going to get backups of all the communications, email, documentation, everything. Because we're going to name names. Or for those who want to do that, there's going to be names named, and people are going to go to trial, people are going to be punished. And some people will probably be shipped out to foreign nations so that they can get their pound of flesh out of you. You should have known that what you were doing was an insurrection of the Constitution. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. Period. That goes to all. Okay. So, let's go down to the last two.
51?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
We just read 50, didn't we? You just read 50, yes. Right? Okay.
They cannot say that the right meant was a constitutional right to resist the constitutional authority, for that is a contradiction in terms as much as a legal right to resist a law.
Okay. So they, the nullifiers cannot say that the right meant was a constitutional right to resist the constitutional authority, for that is a contradiction in terms. In other words, they do have this constitutional authority. But what happens when it's not constitutional? When it's violating the basics, not just the Constitution, but the fundamental nature of law, when they're attacking you. I want to keep, and I'm going to keep bringing this in, that nullifying a law, you know, like the federal government is nullifying, you know, or not nullifying, they're creating law over drugs, the war on drugs. They're determining what, you know, what the penalties are and so forth. And states could actually nullify those laws. And some people say that legalizing marijuana is a way of nullifying that law. Technically, it shouldn't even be, I mean, it should be left to the state anyway. And I think one of the reasons why the federal government hasn't really pushed the issue is because, so actually, before me saying this, what do you think? Why is it that the federal government is allowing states to cherry pick nullifying? In other words, why are some states able to nullify some of the drug laws in allowing certain drugs and legalizing them, where they're basically, in essence, turning their back towards the federal drug laws? Got any idea why they would be doing that? Why would the federal government not actually go and say, hey, you got to enforce this? As a matter of fact, there was that conversation when marijuana and those types of laws were coming up when we had a Republican in office.
But when because they know they don't have the authority or the jurisdiction? I don't know.
That's not it at all. The reason why they found favor in allowing states to nullify is because it creates, just as Madison stated in this document, in the notes on nullification, it creates a level of chaos. Because it actually enables states to think, well, if they can do that, then we can do this. And it actually makes everybody go and do things that do not save the union, that will not save the Constitution. They would rather have you doing things that, you know, make you feel a little better, but doesn't really solve the problem. They don't want you to solve the problem. That needs to be everybody's takeaway here. There is a direct cognitive decision that they are doing everything they can to make sure that you can create your chaos, because if you do, you will not be solving the problem, and they still have their control.
Right.
Okay, so did we hit 52? No, let's go ahead.
Nope, not yet. They can find no middle ground between a natural and a constitutional right on which a right of nullifying interposition can be placed, and it is curious to observe the awkwardness of the attempt by the most ingenious advocates.
And then it's Upshur and Bierman. And so those are two Southern, I guess, senators that are trying to basically push this. So he's mentioned the names. I mean, this is the first time Madison has written such a, at least for our purposes, for formal documentation. This is pretty hot stuff. But anyway, as you can tell, it is the right of nullification is this fundamental basic, but you can't stay in the union when it comes to federal laws or the oppression of those laws. What we have to do is we have to interpose. But if you are under attack, if your state is being directly attacked, the self-preservation is at, I mean, the fact that you're being coerced and forced into taking money from the government just to survive, because they're taking everything away from you, then you have to defend yourself. I'm J.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process. This is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.